You are tuned in to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting live from Burnaby Mountain, BC.
Hello, and welcome to the Canadian Philosophy Show. I'm your host again. My name is Aaron Wang, and I'm joined by Kara Tienen, Brendan Brownlee, and Hale Rotary. We're going to be talking mainly about a paper that Kara wrote for one of her classes on two-tiered healthcare in Canada.
So I had to do some research about two-tier medical access in Canada and whether or not the policy that's going on in Canada right now is justified. So the debate over two-tier MRI access or other types of procedures is a complex ethical issue facing Canada as diagnostic services grow, reaching a median of 27.7 weeks in 2023. Policymakers, healthcare professionals have to deal with universal access and equity.
Yeah, let me be the useful idiot here. Can you explain what a two-tier medical system even is?
So two-tier medical system is basically having private and public healthcare. So in the United States, they have a two-tier medical system. And in Canada, there's a debate on whether we have a two-tier medical system already. The argument is whether or not that is something that is morally permissible in Canada. So the thought experiment is basically you have two hockey players. One hockey player has access to private healthcare, and one hockey player has access to public healthcare. And they both have a similar injury. Whether or not it is justified that the person that has access to the private health care then gets the other benefits of being able to recover faster, be on the ice longer, and lose out on less ice time, therefore getting more opportunities to get into the NHL versus a public system where a family who cannot afford to pay for a private system has to then wait over a year most times to get into an MRI, and then therefore the healthcare is actually not equal and less than because their treatment has been delayed a year. So the kid hasn't been on the ice for a year, so his opportunities aren't as much. Therefore, he probably won't make the NHL.
Right. So these are of real consequence, right?
It's a real consequence.
You could have two players who are like roughly same capabilities, same capacities, but since they get different healthcare, well, they have different. Those have different outcomes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Their lives are different.
And Canada is based on universal access to healthcare that is equal.
Right. So having a two-tier system in this way kind of infringes upon this equality in a way.
Yeah, and almost like the access of our own, what Canada is based on about being equal and free, but instead we're actually still living in this superficial have and have-nots.
Because I think you're right. The ethical debate is whether this is justified or not. But I'm curious what a debate looks like when people are don't know whether we even have one. Like what is up in the air when it's up in the air whether we have a two-tier medical system?
Because you can get free care in Canada if mm-hmm. you're willing to wait a very long time. Right. Whereas in the States, you will never get care unless you pay for it.
Right. Okay. So. Sure. Yeah. So the reason it looks like it's up in the air is because you do otherwise have like access to public care, or you can kind of skip the line, as it were, and get private care. I'm trying to imagine what it would look like if those were completely distinct. I guess you'd have to have like two castes of people. One of them could.
That's kind of the problem that it's turning into in Canada, right?
Right.
Because once you are offering people that have these financial means to then give their children better off care, at what point then are we just building more of a separation between the two, which is like that's not the goal of Canada.
But on the other side of things, if you look at the economics of it, it makes a lot of sense for the government to allow private healthcare to exist because the government's not paying for those MRIs. So that's taking money or that's taking away expense from the government onto private citizens. So the government is saving money by not by allowing these things to exist, and then that makes the line shorter for the people who have to wait because those private clinics exist. So I'm not saying that it's that's the right answer, but I am saying there is a kind of a discussion here.
Correct. So you're touching on what I spoke about in my paper, which is the kind of perspectives of, you can go with like the libertarian perspective, which is the freedom and market solutions. You can go in the
egalitarian.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Which is equity and healthcare as a right. Or you can go with the Rawlsian justice, which is balancing equality with equity, which is more, I'm more leaned to the Rawlsian, just because it was more so like it's permissible as long as it doesn't affect the lower tiered medicine. Like, as long as they're not getting worse care, then it's allowed.
Yeah, and I think that's like any sort of discussion around the interaction of the state and independent business or whatever it's going to be, there's also going to be a discussion around like the resources, and particularly the scarcity of resources. And I think that one of the major issues with the two-tiered system that immediately comes to mind, and I think is like, yeah, in an ideal world, if we had like a plethora of doctors and nurses, then it would be great. Like, some people could go into to private, but most people could work in public, and you could have these two options. And Aaron, like you were saying, it would be having some level of private, we'd be able to take some pressure off of that public system. The issue is that there is such a scarcity of professionals within the whole system. And the other aspect of that, which is, okay, anytime you are going to privatize something, obviously the financial aspect is going to become the primary driver of that system. And so there's going to be, if there's such scarcity, there's going to be a lot more impetus for those private institutions to pay more, right? To be able to get the best doctors, to be able to charge the most, to be able to get the resources that they need to operate effectively.
On the other side of things, Canada has had unprecedented levels of immigration in recent years. Yeah. And we have unprecedented levels of not investing in training doctors for 20 to 30 years. So is it it's like, if you're going to promise free healthcare for all of your citizens, invite an extra 3 million citizens into your country and make no investments into healthcare, what do you expect to happen? It's not, and like, I'm like, my grandpa was telling me that like 20, 30 years ago in Alberta, the premier decided to cut back on funding the medical program for Alberta to balance the budget. And it's like, okay, that might have been a great decision 30 years ago, but like, a few things have changed in 30 years. Maybe we could invest more in training doctors now. And fortunately, BC is starting to do that. Someone actually came to my door with the World Wildlife Fund, and he was actually going to become a doctor. And he was saying they've opened like, it's basically like 400 doctors they can train a year now, and then they want to add like another 200 doctors a year to be able to train in BC capacity. So it's like,
yeah, SFU is getting a medical program.
Like that's great. Is that going to fix the fact that we have a million people in BC who don't have access to healthcare when you have an extra 400 doctors per year?
So the way that we go about funding doctors,
the federal government funds healthcare and the provincial governments administer it.
Right. So it's not just no one wants to become a doctor. It's that, like, we actually have to fund these things. We have to create the positions for them. And, like, maybe there are people who would want to go into those positions, but we're kind of limiting them.
Well, there isn't necessarily space in the educational institutions. And because
that's what the investment part would look like, is investing.
I would say that, and also barriers to entrance as well with the testing as well. So
yeah, it's very difficult to become a doctor, and probably rightly so. But I also think that, like, from an ethical point of view, like, obviously discussion here, thinking about a two-tiered system, there's also, well, one, the obvious answer is, well, the most ideal would be for the public system to be
better,
highly
much
effective.
Better. Yeah.
Right? Like, that seems like the simplest answer to that. That's problematic. The other aspect, too, though, is creating a two-tier system obviously begins to have more discussions around society and class distinction and stuff like that, right? Where basically, you know, is it like what kind of egalitarian, fair society are we, you know, creating or encouraging, where something as essential as healthcare, basically the maintenance of individuals' like physical and mental well-being, is determined by your effectively your financial and social status, right? Like, oh, because I'm rich, I can afford the treatments that I need. Like, but you get to wait. Too bad. Like, so too bad. So sad. Is that like? There's something to me initially, like I understand why there's obviously some like very clear economic, like some arguable economic benefits, but it seems to me very clear that there's a kind of an, I want to use the word icky ethical, social ethical thing going on there where it's like we can, differentiating society like that is something we do, but it's probably not good.
Yeah, that's kind of what I talked about. Like using it as like a relief valve isn't something that's a good thing to do. Like that's not a principle you want to abide by. Like, oh, we only have two-tier medicine because we need it to relieve the public sector, right? Like that in itself is flawed. So I think that, but I do think about the people that are wealthy enough, they will just fly away. They will just fly out of country. They'll go and they'll, like, there's that type of medical treatments that are available in other countries are exponentially better than the healthcare we have in Canada. So that's already happening, right? So, like, that's the other side of things where it's like, okay, but this is already happening whether or not we want to label it. And it's just like, do we allow this in Canada? And it's more so, it's like, well, it is already happening just without it. Getting a permission slip.
And on the other side of things, is it morally irresponsible for a person to look after their own health or the health of their family members? If that, like if I pay for my own health care.
A parent's duty. Yeah. It's their duty to take care of their children.
If I am in danger of dying, and I am willing to pay money to prevent me from dying, is there anything ethically wrong with that? Because I think this is a really... like it's an ethical dilemma, because on one side of things, like we do really want this to be like we do want a good public healthcare system. And I think honestly, as a nation, we should probably talk about the funding model, the federal funding model, and a way of mixing the bag a little bit. So it's not only federal, so that provinces and municipalities have some amount of control over how their healthcare is funded. Because if we always rely on the government, federal government, to be competent, then we're reliant on them for having
competent. I would say that doctors do have a lot of autonomy, though, with the funding. Like, so, like, when it comes to hospitals, each department gets, like, a head doctor, and that doctor allocates all of the funds for the whole year. That's how they pay the salaries. That's how they do everything. So, really, like, it seems to be more of, like, just kind of, instead of looking at it like, okay, well, we need two-tier system, we need to figure out what's actually going on with the core issue of the problem.
Where I live in Nanaimo, there's this weird situation of there's this cancer tower that they've wanted to be built for 10 years, and it's an addition to the hospital. So that they want to add a tower to the hospital specifically for cancer treatments, and they also want to add a cath lab, a cardiology lab for people with heart attacks. And the reason, I think the major reason why this
they
don't have it in Nanaimo. No.
Yeah, do you know why?
No, I don't.
So they have a doctor in Victoria who covers the whole island for cardiology, and he bills everything, and he doesn't want to share. So he doesn't have anybody working in Nanaimo, because then he gets all of the clients. And it's just it's a bureaucracy mess when it comes to Victoria and the healthcare system to get money for the rest of the island. But the biggest problem, this is what I was talking about in my paper, is that Nanaimo still pushes TMK. And that's something that's been a subpar medicine since 2008. But because we don't have the funding to get our patients where we need to go, you have to give them TMK. And they are getting less... they're getting substandard medical care because of our funding issues. So, like, that's another, like, big problem. And that's happening today. Like, that is, like, like we're having hallway medicine. Grandma's in the hallway dying because we have all of these systemic issues.
I guess the thing for me is, like, I don't want to be on... I want to be on the fence. I don't want to say like we have to forbid. I don't want to say like I have to ethically say in every circumstance I have to forbid this person from using private healthcare. And I also don't want to say ethically speaking, people have to pay for private healthcare. I feel like there should be some kind of compromise here. But
I
don't know.
I think though that talking about it from like an ethical standpoint or some sort of ethical system standpoint, that there's two. The differentiation is not equivalent. Like you were talking about earlier. Individuals accessing private care if they can. Look, if you're an individual and you're sick or a family member is sick or whatever, and you have the capacity to access some kind of care, I don't think there's anything ethically wrong with doing that from an individual's point of view. But that's not the same thing as condemning setting up a two-tier system that those individuals might use.
Kind of conversation.
So the condemnation is not on the individuals who are trying to access healthcare; it is on the government for not providing it in a way that is accessible.
Well,
to
it would be
of
it,
all
it would
economic
like, look,
levels.
If there is a two-tiered system, and people are in some sort of dire straits, being able like look if I have a bunch of money and I get in a terrible accident. I'm not going to – like it would seem to me to be very ethically alien to like if we're like watching the situation at the point of that person and be like, oh, if you decide to go to private healthcare right now, you're making an immoral choice even though you're bleeding out with like all your limbs broken. That makes no sense. But saying that, oh, that it is a morally right to have a society in which individuals' wealth determines something as fundamental as their health – even if that is the case, like frankly, that is already how we operate.
Well,
we can still condemn that and say that's not a good thing.
I don't think that is a good thing, but I also think at some point we have to be realistic and say that the government can't solve every type of individual's every health problems. So there's always going to be some amount of discrepancies within our systems. We should aim to try to make that better. But there also are probably some situations, especially for some types of cancer, where just because the United States just has better, like they have more research, they have the best research in the world on some types of cancer. We can't necessarily treat that here. If the government has an obligation to provide care to those people, then they have to send them to the States or another country for treatment. And once you open that door, where does that stop? It's like if the ethical duty to provide care is ironclad, it would bankrupt our government. Yeah. Instantaneously.
Well, it's like the difference between like an ethical ideal and what is pragmatic, obviously, right? Which is like always going to be a conversation in these sorts of things. But again, like
it's just like not causing more of a discrepancy, though, right? So like right now, like we have like a baseline of what we think is acceptable healthcare for everyone, and everyone has access to it. But as soon as we say that, like, oh, it's morally justified for us to have two-tier medicine. That's when the issues come in. It seems like you're just picking a lesser evil.
Well, the federal government could pay for people who desperately need MRIs. But then the question is, what does desperately need
mean?
But
then what's the difference of having private versus public then? If public is just going to pay for private anyways.
If public means that the government pays for it, as the federal government pays for it, then there's no difference between the federal government paying for MRIs at a clinic that mm-hmm. is,
it just seems like then you're just building this bloated system of having two hospitals.
Well, no, you don't need, but this is the whole reason for why MRIs happen outside of hospitals is because they don't have to happen at a hospital. They just have to happen where there's an MRI machine. And so it's more economically efficient for there to be two clinics with just MRI machines and one hospital. And then you don't have people driving to a hospital who don't need to drive to a hospital. They're driving to a clinic instead. Could we have publicly run clinics? Could we have publicly run community health centers? Rather than just having publicly run hospitals. I think we could. I think that there are a lot of ways. I mean, there are also these things called community health centers that existed that are municipally funded, that are medical centers that existed before this system was adopted in Canada. So we're not...
But who's paying for it? That's my concern.
Municipal government.
But the municipal government is getting it from the private.
Property taxes.
We're already paying how much in property taxes? The wealthy people that would be paying for this, you're going to bankrupt them at this point.
It comes down to cost benefit analysis. There's actually a whole field dedicated to this called health economics, which honestly, if Canada was serious about this, we would have someone at the federal level who understood health economics and would be using it for the benefit of our country. Which is, I think, somewhat happened, but it's early stages. It's also very, very difficult in Canada because, again, regionally diverse. So the health economics of BC or even Nanaimo is not the same as the health economics of, you know, Victoria or but in terms of I know, for instance, in Singapore they have certain things where for cancer drugs, they actually have a cancer drug list where if your drug is on this list, it's covered by the government, it's covered by certain health insurance providers. They also have these things called health spending accounts. So if you everyone is strongly encouraged to have health insurance, number one, and that's provided for in Singapore very strongly. Then also everyone also has a health spending account given to them by the government saying, like, this is how much money, it's for healthcare, use it for healthcare. So, I mean, we could have a health spending account.
And they tried to bill people to come to the hospital, and they didn't actually have to pay it, but they would show you how much it costs, and it didn't do anything.
Well, no, a health spending account is not this. No, that's like if you had an account for, it's kind of like private health insurance that the government gives you, where they say like $2,000 a year, your medical expenses are covered.
Yeah, this is your allowance.
You have it. It's kind of like universal basic income for healthcare. Yeah. That's what a health spending account is. Yeah. Anyway, the overall point was if a drug is too expensive in Singapore, the government of Singapore will forbid the use of the drug in Singapore unless the company lowers the price of the drug. So they have those types of mechanisms in place.
Well, but that just highlights, I think, even more, like talking about private and public health care, but also just becoming more between like the public services and the private economic world, private industry or whatever, like the tension that exists between those two, right? And like part of what makes public health care so difficult to fund and why we even think about private is by virtue of the fact that like there's so much more enticement for various companies and professionals and all that kind of stuff to be drawn to a private world because you just make way more money doing it, right? Like you're just a lot more of a financial incentive.
We also live next to the States. And is it better, will you make more money as a doctor in Canada or more money as a doctor in the States? And I mean, there was this, when they were trying to close the border in Canada, there was this thing in Michigan where like, there's like thousands of Canadian nurses that cross the border every day to work in the States because they cost less.
Yeah, I remember with was COVID too. The New York hospital brought in a bunch of Canadians during COVID. Yeah, is it morally justified? Like, it's hard to say, right? Like, it's not an ethical of whether a parent should or shouldn't give their child care. It's is it morally justified to have this system in place?
Well, okay, so if we forbid the system from being in place and do nothing else, we are ensuring that people who have care under the current system are not receiving care in the future. That is morally unjustified. I feel like if you're going to make a change, you have to make a change that will make people better off and do that.
Yeah, and I don't know if two-tier would make it better off. I think it would actually damage the people that don't have the funds.
Well, I mean, okay, so could we absorb what is currently private into the public sphere, make it all publicly funded?
And that's an idea, but then it just turns into more of this, like, okay, now we're just kind of stealing from Paul to pay Piper, and like, what's really going on here?
I think getting some transparency and about these funding models so that actual people who are very intelligent, who are all over Canada, who understand accounting, understand business, understand how to run things, are allowed to see behind the veil of all of these things and just be like, look, like, let's make some healthcare that is funded in a way that makes sense and that we can all agree makes sense. And if it doesn't make sense, we actually are allowed to talk about that productively. We don't get fired for it.
So wouldn't they have to lobby that though? Like, you would have to go through one of the political parties. We'd have to bring it up through a bill.
I mean,
like,
we're a democracy, just right.
Yeah. But I just mean, like, who is that person? Like, I would love, like, can we like Google him? Like, can we find somebody? Like, you know, like it's so nice to say, I'm going to appeal to authority and say, I wish there was a finance guy that came in, but it's like, who is he?
Well, I mean, it would be someone who's educated in health economics.
Yeah, well, we can always make up those ideas, but it's like realistically, like, who is that person that's going to do that?
I don't know one specifically, but I know there are people who who are well educated in MRIs and stuff like that. But then again, you're paying $1 million consultant to come in and consult on something that there may not be a solution for, or the government just might not like the solution. And should we pay for $1 million consultants again to? Who knows if that's a good idea?
I think it's also too. It's like, especially like thinking about like the philosophical side of this, right? Like, there's always different like approaches to these issues. Like, obviously, we've been thinking about more of like the pragmatic side. Okay, like we're actually okay. Like, let's look at like the real Canadian healthcare situation. Yeah. What makes the most sense? How could it be improved with some eye towards fairness? You know, when I speak about like my condemnation of that, of a two-tier system, it comes more from a like normative ethical side, where it's like you could think about like we talked about. John Rawls earlier brought up, but even like a sort of like veil, if we were to think about the ideal society, right, like ethically, what would that actually look like? Well, I mean, you know, if everybody, and for listeners, if they're not like aware, like the most basic version of this is like you're some undefined version of yourself, your entity self or whatever, all of us are together and we're deciding what ideally society would be like, not knowing what your position is going to be in terms of your, you know, your level of you know, your financial position, status, whether or not you have a disability, race, whatever that thing's going to be. So, like, in that ideal world, it would seem that, like, having stuff just generally cared for on a quality level, things like healthcare, housing, food, those sort of, like, basic, very basic human sort of survival needs, like, that kind of society would obviously be, like, ideal. I personally think it's kind of hard to argue against that, but it would also have to be fundamental in terms of supporting that whole system, right? Like, that would have to come before financial incentives and all that kind of stuff, which is highly unrealistic.
Yeah.
Like, it's not as much as like, I like, that's the way I would like things to be. I think it would be better for the majority of people. It's just not like, we're not going to walk into our, you know, current social and economic system and, you know, turn on the communist, you know, mode, right? So then we had come back to the discussion, okay, well, look, is having a two-tiered system on some level the best worst option we can do?
And I don't know, right? if that's morally justified when we say it like that. And that's what I get hung up on.
Yeah, well, it's not great.
Yeah, like, I don't think you should choose something that is that. Like, I think if it has a negative connotation, then I'm like, I'm so reluctant to adopt that.
And this is getting into some like meta philosophy talk. This is also like one of the kind of tensions and issues with philosophy more generally, which is, you know, we can conceptualize all sorts of ways in which we think the world should be ideally, but oftentimes those are very distant and disconnected from how things actually are on the ground and what people are actually doing. And a lot of times it's considerably more messy and difficult and unnerving and frankly unethical in many different ways. And yet things operate somewhat functionally.
I mean, I think obviously, like, as philosophers, we understand the appeal of having an ideal. It looks, we get a picture of what society or any kind of institution that we want to be talking about should look like. Pragmatically, it can be frustrating, right? Because the gap exists, or you don't have the means yet, or you're just having difficulties figuring out what implementing that looks like, or you like understand that the situation, like, it's just obvious that there's a problem. The obstacle, the ideal doesn't address the obstacle that is the most apparent thing, right? I guess in this instance, what's being discussed is not so much like, is this a good or a bad thing, or even, well, that's what it is. That's what's up for discussion. And we kind of understand that the two-tiered system obviously like has problems. The ideal, we can figure that out as well, but I think that specifically the grounding question of like, is this justified? Is this is this producing a system that is worse off for sort of the people who need access to this the most? If it doesn't give us an ideal picture, or if it doesn't give us like an, you know, a list of what to do, it can definitely get us in the right direction at least. I think specifically the way that you word your question of, is it justified? It tells us whether we should be whether we should aspire to have a two-tier system, or it tells us not to have it. Again, like, we don't have any like concrete answers to what doing something about that looks like, but again, it gives us a sense of it gives us kind of clarity in our direction, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, like, we don't have answers, but we feel less uncertain.
A bit of a moral direction, yeah.
Yeah, and I wonder, because, again, like, Aaron, I think that your kind of turning to health economics, it's really good. I think it's really important, and I think if we had people who knew...